a way to acknowledge me. There's no way for me to know this is a fact, but I'm certain of it as a feeling. Rhiannon? It's Rebecca's voice. She's asked me something. I leave my thoughts for a second, return to the table. I look over to Justin and see that he's paying attention to me now. He saw me drift off. Once upon a time, he would have assumed I was thinking about him. But I don't see any of that in his face now. He lowers his eyes back to his lunch. I'm sorry, I say again. But this time it's to Rebecca, for not listening to whatever it is she has to say. You have to fix this. That's what I'm telling myself all through the rest of the day. A is going to leave me. A will never be mine. A will never be able to be a normal part of my life. Justin is here. Justin loves me. Justin is a part of me. I cannot ignore that. He is angry, but he is angry because he's confused, because I'm making him miserable. He knows something is off. He knows me well enough to know that. He is not making things up. I am really doing this to him. Which is why I have to stop. Which is why I have to fix it. He doesn't seem surprised to find me at his locker at the end of the day. I know I've been out of it, I say, before he can dismiss me. I know I haven't been paying attention 100%. That has nothing to do with you, I swear. And I'm grateful to you for calling me on it, because sometimes I'm so out of it, I don't even realize I'm out of it, you know? But I'm back. I'm here now. I want to know what's going on with you. I want to be a part of it. I want us to take as much time as we need to get back on track.
It's fine, he says.
I watch as he puts his books in his locker. The back of his neck taunts me. His shoulders draw me in. Do you want to do something? I ask. He closes the locker, turns back to me.
Sure,
he says. And in his eyes, in his voice, I sense it. Relief. I ask him where he wants to go. He says his house. I know make-up sex is supposed to mean making it up to each other after having a fight, but right now, I feel like it's make-up sex because I'm making it all up. I have transformed myself into such a devoted, pretend girl that even I can believe the imitation is real. I know actions speak loudly to Justin, and he is speaking loudly back. I am grateful for the communication, for the way the intensity makes my body feel, but my mind is in another room. In the heat of it, in the rush of it, he feels safe enough to say, "Don't leave me." And I promise. I recognize how vulnerable he is, and I swear. Afterward, I ask him about his shit day yesterday, and he barely remembers why it was so bad. Just the usual reasons, and the weight of them feeling so usual. He doesn't mention me with another guy, and I don't find it underneath his words either. I think I'm in the clear. He asks me to stay for dinner. I call my mother, who seems irritated but doesn't say no. Justin's mother also seems irritated when she comes home and Justin tells her I'm staying, but that irritation is directed at him, not me. I tell her I don't have to stay, that I know it's last minute, but she says she's happy to have me here and that it's been too long since she's seen me. When Justin and I first started dating, she treated me like this stray he'd picked up. Now that we've been dating a while, I've been upgraded to pet status, part of the family, but not really a member. Justin's father likes me more, or at least wants more for me to like him. He manages to come home exactly 5 minutes before dinner is ready, then acts like he's at the head of the table, even though the table is square. Justin and I are perpendicular, and we answer his father's questions like it's a joint interview. Our bland answers about school and homework go unchallenged by his bland responses. I risk asking about Justin's grandmother, and am told she's doing as well as can be expected. Everyone tenses up, so I change the subject and compliment the food. Justin's mom tells me she's sorry that there won't be enough for seconds, since she wasn't planning on cooking for four. In the beginning, I'd wanted Justin's house to become my second house, and Justin's family to become my second family, but I only made it halfway. This makes sense because Justin barely wants his family for himself. Part of me was disappointed that my second chance at a decent mom fell short. But mostly, I decided to claim the absence in Justin's life. I can remember thinking that if he didn't feel like he had a family, I would be his family. If he didn't feel like he had a home, I would make our space together a home. I believed love could do this. I believed this was what love was for. Now I'm not sure what we have, what kind of family we are. I used to imagine us in the future, getting married, having kids, and then play it backward until it reached us now. But I haven't done that in a while. Justin is uncomfortable all through dinner, and I know I am the comfortable part. I know that I am the person at the table who brings him the most happiness, who he feels closest to. When dinner's over and I've helped his mother do the dishes, I find him back in his room, playing a video game. He pauses it when I come in, then pats the space next to him, beckoning me over.
"Sorry to put you through all that," he says, kissing me.
"Dinner was good," I tell him, even though it wasn't really. I know we're not going to go beyond kissing with his parents in the house. It's like every move we make is amplified straight to their ears. He passes me a controller, and we play a while. If we were different kids, we'd be doing our homework together. Instead, we avoid our homework together. I realize how irresponsible this is. I don't think it occurs to Justin at all. I'm glad we're back to normal. I don't know if I've missed this, but it feels right for right now. It's like A has never existed. A is a story I told myself. Justin is better at this game than I am, which is true of most of the games we play. I keep dying, and he keeps passing me new lives. At 9, I finally beg off, tell him I have to get my bio work done so I don't fail out. I'm bringing it up partly because it's true, and partly because I want him to remember to do his work, too. He's much more at risk of failing out than I am.
"Okay, I'll see you tomorrow," he says.
His eyes don't leave the screen. I make sure to say goodbye to his parents on my way out. His mom says again that it was good to see me. His father walks me to the door. When I step outside, I don't feel I've lost anything by leaving. Like when I leave my own house, there's always a part of me that stays behind, waiting for me to get back. That's what makes it my home, that feeling that a part of me is always waiting for me there. As I walk to my car, I don't turn back to see if Justin's at the window, watching me go. I know he isn't. The part of him that waits for me isn't that strong, not when he knows he has me. When I get back to my room, I'm not worried about our fight anymore. This morning seems like ancient history. It's A I'm worried about. It's A who I think is waiting for me. I haven't sent word all day, and it's feeling, now that I acknowledge it, like an abandonment, which is wrong. It's A who abandons me in the jump from place to place, body to body. But I know I'm guilty here, too. I check my email, and am almost relieved to find that there isn't anything new. This excuses some of my silence, if A is being silent, too. Although, if A is being silent, it may very well be because I told A to stop. I get ready for bed, then sleep for 8 hours. When I wake up, the first obligation I feel is to end the silence. So I write, A. I'm sorry I didn't get to write to you yesterday. I meant to, but then all these other things happened. None of them important, just time-consuming. Even though it was hard to see you, it was good to see you. I mean it. But taking a break and thinking things out makes sense. How was your day? What did you do? R. I know this is in two different places at once. I meant to write to you, but let's keep taking a break. But it's an accurate reflection of where I am, or where I think I am. Even though I know it's impossible, and I know it won't help, I still want to know where A is. Does this mean I'm waiting for A? I don't know. At the very least, I'm waiting to see what happens next. Chapter 18. I get a rushed email from A as I'm driving to school. I read it in my car before I go inside. A tells me she spent yesterday in the body of an immigrant girl who had to clean toilets to make a living, and the day before A wasn't feeling well, so we stayed home at this other girl's house and watched TV. Today, A's another girl who has this big track meet, so she has to stay where she is. Even though I told him not to come here, I'm disappointed. I want to contradict myself. I want to overrule my hesitations. I want A to be here. But I can't steal that girl from her track meet. And when I picture A as some runner girl, I slow myself down. What if she's another Ashley? Or even just normal-looking? What would we do then? I think about writing back to A, but if I'm not telling him, her, to drop everything to see me, I don't have much else to say. I am not going to tell A about Justin, not about the fight, not about the making up. And what else do I have in my life that's worth talking about? I turn off my phone and head into school. I go through the motions. I try not to talk in class, but talk when I have to. I say hello to friends, but not much more. I give Justin what he wants, enough distance to be himself, but enough closeness to know I haven't gone far. I eat lunch without tasting it. I find myself thinking of Kelsey, about her notebook containing all those ways to die, not because I want to kill myself. I am nowhere near wanting to kill myself. But I can understand feeling so detached from your own life, to feel that your connection to everyone else is so thin that all it would take is one decisive snip to be separated completely. If I don't cling, I drift. I feel that no one is holding me. In my life, I am the only one who holds. Except for A. But A is not here. Rebecca and Preston try to reach me. They see the thin thread and tie messages to it, sliding them my way. Preston invites me to another round of Bylish shopping. Rebecca tries to bribe me into a coffee excursion after school. Both of them remind me that Darren Johnston is having a party tomorrow night. I'm sure I'll end up going. Plans. I realize I'm not making plans because I want to see where A is living tomorrow, if A will be free. It's the weekend. I can drive far if I have to. No. I see Justin and I think, stop it. He asks me if I want to go to a movie. He even lets me choose. Once upon a time, this would have made me happy. I can't be bothered to tell my mother I'm not coming home for dinner. This will make it 2 nights in a row, and she's going to give me hell for it. So I figure I might as well do what I'm going to do and get the hell after, instead of getting the hell before and not being able to go. We drive around for a while, then get some Taco Bell and head to an early-ish movie. As we're waiting for the coming attractions, I find myself looking at all the other people in the theater. Most of them are my age. and I can't help but wonder if one of them might be A. Her track meet would be over by now. Maybe she decided to go to a movie with friends afterward. It's not impossible. A few girls catch me watching. Most turn away. A couple confront me, staring back to make me feel uncomfortable. Justin is fidgety, maybe sensing how my attention is wandering. I lean into him, hold his hand. He shifts the popcorn in his lap so this can happen. But when the previews start, he pulls away. I don't think the movie is what he expected it to be. The posters promised it was a horror movie set in space, but soon it's clear that the most horrific thing the astronaut is fighting is the endlessness of his boredom and the pointlessness of his life. Justin's eyelids start to flutter. I want to use his shoulder as a pillow, but he told me once that if I lean there for too long, it kills his circulation. So I go back to looking at the audience as much as I can, picking out which person I'd be most attracted to if A were inside. I know the answer should be all of them. It is not all of them. It's not as simple as saying all the guys are yes and all the girls are no. It's more complicated than that, although mostly it's the guys I consider. The answer, the real A I want, is sitting right next to me. When I get home, it's my father who's waiting in the kitchen, looking disappointed. He tells me Mom's already gone to bed, and that it was inconsiderate of me to ditch dinner without a call. I lie and say I told Mom ages ago that this was going to be a date night with Justin. I call it a date night so my dad will imagine we went for ice cream sodas and gazed lovingly into each other's eyes the whole time. He falls for it completely. I check for a new email from A, but don't find anything. And I don't write back, since I still don't have anything interesting to say. The next morning, my mother says she isn't speaking to me. I know I'm supposed to feel bad, but mostly I'm happy not to deal with her. I'm worried that they won't let me go to the party tonight, so I make a big production of doing my homework and completing some random chores. It's very easy to win my father over this way. Before I leave the house, I consider emailing A and letting him, her, know where I'm going to be. Then I remember what happened to that poor guy Nathan the last time this happened, and I decide to stay silent. Still, I wonder where he, she, is. I also wonder why I haven't heard anything. I pick Justin up because I know he's planning on drinking. I ask him what he did all day, and he barely remembers. I think maybe his life is as uneventful as mine, and that's why we're together, to be each other's eventfulness. Or maybe that's why we go to parties, to find some eventfulness there, or wastedness, or both. Preston's also driven, so he and I sip Diet Cokes as I tell him about the movie, which is more interesting to make fun of than it was to watch. While I'm talking, Preston keeps his eye on the door, waiting for his gaydar to go off. It stays silent for a while, until this James Dean wannabe strides in. Preston comes to attention like a hunting dog that spotted the prettiest duck to ever fall from the sky. "Really?" I say. "Him?" Preston nods once, twice. "Do you want me to find out who he is?" I ask. Preston shakes his head once, twice. A minute later, Dirk Nielsen bounds in, car keys dangling in his hand. He looks around, spots James Dean, heads over, and kisses him hello. "Shit," Preston says. "Sorry," I tell him. "Well, it was nice for the 5 seconds it lasted." James Dean looks over at us, looks over at me. For a brief second, I feel connection. But then I really look into his eyes and I know it's not A. It's nothing. I talk to Preston some more. Then Rebecca and Ben come join us. I'm telling them about the movie when Stephanie comes tearing out of the kitchen, looking like she's on fire. Steve follows her for a few feet before stopping and yelling, "What the fuck?" at least 3 times at her back. "Who wants to take this one?" Rebecca asks. When no one else makes a move, she sighs and bolts after Stephanie. Ben and Preston head over to Steve. I walk around them and find Justin doing shots with Kara Wallace and Lindsay Craig, the girl who was so certain I was up to no good with the guy I was taking around school. I steel myself and walk over. "So what happened with Steve and Stephanie?" I ask. I am clearly asking Justin, but Lindsay answers, "She saw him eating pepperoni and said it was really rude of him because she's been vegetarian for, like, the past 3 minutes." Kara finds this funny. Justin just shrugs at me, like he stopped trying to figure Stephanie and Steve out years ago. Lindsay's staring at me in a way that makes me wonder whether I wore the wrong thing, said the wrong thing, or am just the wrong person. I decide not to ask. Justin seems taken care of, so I head back out of the kitchen. Once again, I find myself wandering around all of the conversations, avoiding all of my friends. I am this body, I think. When my friends see this body, they assume they know a lot about the person inside of it. And when people I don't know see it, they also make assumptions. No one ever really questions these assumptions. They are this layer of how we live our lives, and I'm no different from them. When I saw James Dean walk in, I felt I knew as much about him as I'm sure he felt he knew about me when he looked my way. It's like an instant form of reading, the way we define each other. The house isn't that big. There's no dance floor in the basement. I'm not even sure there is a basement. There's a line for the bathroom off the living room, so I walk upstairs, hoping to find a bathroom there, and also because it's quieter upstairs. All of the doors on the hallway are closed. I open the first and see it's a bedroom. I'm about to close it when a voice says, "Hello? Can I help you?" I poke my head in and see Darren Johnston cross-legged on his bed, reading The Outsiders.
"Oh, hi, Rhiannon," he says. "The bathroom's the second door on the right. I left it open, but I guess someone closed it. I mean, there might be someone in there, so you should probably knock."
"Thanks," I say. But I don't leave. "Why are you up here reading? I mean, it's your party." Darren smiles slightly.
"I guess I like thinking about throwing a party more than I actually like having people over. Lesson learned."
"Why don't you tell everyone to go home?"
"Because they're enjoying themselves, I think. They shouldn't have to suffer just because I'm feeling antisocial. I needed to leave, so I allowed myself to leave."
I nod to the book. "First time?"
"Nah, more like my 12th.
I remember when I read it. Justin and I were in the same English class last year, and we read it together one Sunday afternoon, lying in his bed. It was a race to see who would finish first, but I slowed myself down because I loved the feeling of us turning the pages at the same time, being in the same part of the story. When we were done, he said how he was blown away by the line, "Nothing gold can stay." He really felt it was true. Then he smiled and said,
"So I guess we'll have to be silver."
And he called me silver for days after. "Do you think gold can stay?" I ask Darren now. His smile is different from Justin's, a little more knowing, a little less eager.
"I don't think anything can stay," he tells me, "good or bad. So I think the important part is to not get caught up in worrying about whether something will stay, and instead enjoy it for the time it's here."
A door opens in the hallway, and a guy calls out,
"Darren, where are you hiding?"
He sounds like a construction foreman calling workers back from lunch. Darren doesn't move.
for the record, he says to me, I'm not hiding.
Darren,
the voice bellows. Then the door to the bedroom opens wider, and James Dean walks in. I had imagined his voice would be sexier.
There you are.
Here I am, Darren admits.
Come party!
I will, when I'm finished with this book. I only have 100 pages left. James makes a move to manhandle Darren up. Then another voice calls,
Charles! Where are you, Charles?
It was so much more enjoyable when people used telegraphs, Darren says with a sigh.
I guess Dirk wants me,
Charles/James says.
I'll see you when your book is done.
Then he turns to the door and hollers,
Coming!
Darren hasn't put down the book. You see, Rhiannon, he says after Charles has left, nothing dumb can stay. After using the bathroom, which Charles has left surprisingly tidy, even putting down both seat and cover, I return to the kitchen. When I walk in, I find Kara's disappeared, and only Lindsay is with Justin now. He looks drunk, and she looks determined. As if she can sense me coming, she reaches out and puts her hand on his shoulder, then moves it down to his chest. His reaction is so fast you could almost call it instinct. In one smooth move, he's removed her hand and pushed her away. There's no way for her to save face. The rejection is so complete. And the best part is, I know he hasn't seen me yet. He didn't do it because I was watching. He did it because he's true to me. I let a minute pass and let Lindsay slither off. Then I make my presence known. Justin doesn't exactly light up to see me, but he doesn't dim either. I tell him how I found Darren reading The Outsiders upstairs.
I love that book, Justin says.
Remember when we read it? I ask. He's probably had too many shots to know what I'm talking about, or at least that's what I figure. Then he calls out,
Hi-ho, Silver!
Not quite as romantic as its origin, but I'm happy he remembers. He steps away from the kitchen counter.
Let's see what's going on,
he says. I follow. We find our friends, we shoot the shit, and I no longer feel like the hidden girl in the visible body. Now I am Justin's version of me. That's who I am, and that's who people see. And it's okay. It helps me navigate the party. It helps me know what to do. It helps me see who to be. I stop looking for A. I turn back to these people, because they're my life. Chapter 19. On Sunday, I give in and write to A. I'm worried that I haven't heard anything. A. Just another weekend here. Went to a party, talked to some people, but none of them were you. Got in trouble with my mom, but survived. Did some homework. Slept a lot this morning. Then saw a better movie this afternoon with Rebecca than I saw on Friday night. Warning, vast is boring. Where/who/how have you been? R. I hit send, even though it doesn't sound right, because I can't imagine how to make it sound better. He doesn't want to hear the details about Justin, and I don't want to tell them. So I've flattened my weekend before mailing it to him. I haven't given him any reason to be interested, which is maybe for the best. The next morning I wake up and feel off. At first I think it's because I fell asleep in my clothes. That doesn't happen very often, so it's weird to see my t-shirt, my jeans. But that's not the only thing. It's like I've woken up in an unfamiliar bed, even though this is my bed, in my room. I expect to look at my clock and find it's 4 in the morning to explain the disorientation. But it's the normal time to wake up, My alarm is going off.
It must be because it's Monday, I think. But then I correct myself. No, it's Tuesday. When I go to hit off the alarm, I find a folded piece of paper on top of it. Even before I open it, I have a vague idea it's a letter I wrote, but I don't remember what it says.
Dear Rhiannon, before I say anything or explain anything, I want you to stop reading and try to remember everything you did yesterday.
It's my handwriting, but I know immediately that I didn't write this. I know immediately. A. Here. A. Me. I start to shiver uncontrollably. I want to yell out, but I'm afraid my parents will hear. I cannot believe this, but I can believe this. I know I will only have one chance to remember what happened before whatever is written on this piece of paper colors my memories or fills in the blanks. So I put the letter down. I sit back in bed. Yesterday, I tell myself. What was yesterday? I remember climbing. I'm outside, on my own, and I am climbing up a mountain. I am looking out over all of these trees. It's peaceful. I didn't skip school. I was in school before that. I had lunch with Justin. He called me Silver again. He ate pizza and complained about Stephanie and Steve. I remember that Stephanie and Steve had a fight, but that was Saturday night, at the party. It was not yesterday. I don't think I saw Stephanie or Steve yesterday. I can't remember. I also can't remember what I said to Justin. I can remember him talking to me, but nothing that I said. Maybe I didn't say anything. I remember leaving dinner early, coming up here. I remember writing the letter. But it's not me writing the letter. I remember the pen in my hand, the paper underneath. But I can't remember deciding what to say. I don't remember thinking. But I also don't remember someone else thinking for me. I pick up the letter again.
I would have never chosen to do this. I hope you know that. I had no idea it would happen until I woke up and opened your eyes. I have tried to respect your day as much as I know how. I could have stayed in bed, stayed at home, but that would have driven me crazy, to be alone with you like that. I had to go out into the day like it was any other day. I hope I have not changed anything for you. I hope that I did not alter your life in any way. If I did, please know it was not my intention. I have done the best I can. I have tried to leave your memories alone. I have tried not to learn anything you would not want me to know. I hope this doesn't scare you. The last thing I want is to scare you. I must say to you again, this was not my choice. If it had been my choice, it would be unforgivable. What do you remember? I am about to tell you the course of your day. This is the last chance for you to have memories uninformed by this account. When I woke up, I was in shock. In all of my years, I've never woken up in the body of someone I care so much about. I wanted to respect your privacy as much as possible, so you are wearing yesterday's underwear, and in moments when anything I had not seen already was exposed, I kept my eyes closed. I met your parents over breakfast, then drove to school. Since I had been there before, it was not hard to navigate. I don't think anyone knew something was wrong. I went to class and kept my head down. I tried to take good notes for you. If you want details about classes, you can find them in your notebooks. I tried to avoid Justin. I knew you would have wanted me to avoid him. This was effective until lunch, when he suggested we go for pizza. I couldn't find a way out of it. Nothing more than conversation happened. He is annoyed with Stephanie and Steven for fighting. I did not see him again until after school. He wanted to do something, but I told him I had to pick up your mother from a doctor's appointment, just in case he mentions it. I realize it is strange that I keep saying I here. By I, of course, mean you. You have to understand. As I did these things, it didn't feel like you were doing them. It felt to me like I was doing them. I wonder if you will feel the same. Because we had already been to an ocean and a forest together, I felt it would be best to head to a mountain. I also wanted us to be alone, and we were very alone as we climbed. If you want to know where we were, the search should still be on your phone. I haven't erased anything. It felt good to be solitary, to feel an exertion that was purely physical. I wanted you to remember that, and to remember me there with you. I don't know if this is possible, but, and I know this sounds strange, I felt like I was feeling it for both of us. Not wanting to get you in trouble, I made it back in time for a very cordial dinner with your parents. Then I retreated to your room, attempted as much of your homework as possible, and decided to write you this note. I have no way to know how you will react to this, nor would I presume to say there is a right or wrong way to react. Even if I haven't caused any damage, I know this breach may still be irreparable. I will understand if you never want to see or speak or write to me again. But I will also hope, desperately, that you will want me to remain in your life. I leave that up to you. I know it is neither my fault nor my choice, but still, I am sorry. I know it must be as hard to read this as it has been to write it. Yours, A.
My mother knocks on the door, making sure I'm awake. Do I remember telling Justin I was taking her to the doctor? Yes, I do. I remember saying that. And when I think harder about it, I even remember telling him it was an appointment for a sleep doctor. He joked to me about stealing some of her pills. How can I know this if I wasn't there? I can only know this because A left it for me. It doesn't matter which of us was in control of my body, as long as the memory was made and stored away. I want to be angry. I want to be freaked out. I want to be able to laugh at this, to find it ridiculous. These would all be rational responses. But instead, I feel sad. Sad that A had to go through this. Sad that there was no way it could be avoided. Sad that it complicates things even more. I know with all my heart that A isn't lying to me. My body and my life were safe when he was in control of them. I know A wouldn't have done anything to hurt me. I also realize, in a way I couldn't have realized before, how easy it would have been for A to destroy everything. A could have made me do anything, break up with Justin, take naked photos of myself and email them to A's account, run away. But nothing like that happened. I know nothing like that happened. Still, it can't all go back to normal. No, this thing has happened to me. I can't just shrug it off like all the other people whose bodies A inhabits. They don't know how they missed a day, but I know. I can't help knowing. I imagine A waiting to see if I will ever be in touch again, if this is enough to make me walk away. I write, A, I think I remember everything. Where are you today? Instead of writing a long email, I want to talk. R. Almost immediately, I get a response. R, I am so relieved to hear from you. I am about 2 hours away, a boy named Dylan, but I will go wherever you want me to go. A. I don't want to wait. But I know I have to go to school to see if A did any damage without realizing it. So I tell A to meet me back at the bookstore after school. We'll have to wait until then. His response is a simple, "Thank you." I don't say anything back. I don't need to. All I have to do is be there later on and prepare to see what happened with everyone else on the yesterday I missed. I am expecting it to be a minefield, to have to account for something I said or didn't say, someplace I went or didn't go. I'm ready for the people in my life to be angry with me or upset with me or confused by me. What happens instead is even worse. Nobody seems to have noticed I was gone or wasn't myself. It starts with my mother sitting in her usual chair. I ask her if I seemed off yesterday.
"No, you were perfectly pleasant," she says. "We had a nice dinner."
I don't point out that a nice dinner should have seemed odd to her, suspicious. But she lives in her own world. I'm not surprised she didn't notice. My friends, though, I think they would have noticed something. Maybe not everything, but at least something. I don't feel them treating me any differently, though. I don't feel any day-long gap in my friendship with them. So I ask, "Was I weird yesterday? Different?" Rebecca tells me I was fine. Preston says he didn't really see me. Ben pretends he didn't hear the question. Stephanie says, "Do you want to know who's different? Steve's different." And Justin says,
"Yeah, you were weird, but that's not exactly different."
He's joking. I can tell he's joking. And I can tell from his joking that it was a good day, that we had a good time, that he didn't mind me going to my mom's doctor's appointment instead of going home with him. A didn't do anything to make things worse between us. If anything, A made it a little better. I am relieved to have avoided being caught, and I'm pissed that no one noticed the difference. I leave school a little early, before anyone can stop me and ask me where I'm going, before no one can stop me and ask me where I'm going. As I drive to the bookstore, I reach for more of yesterday. Mostly I see the trees beneath me. I feel what it was like to be standing on that mountain. I breathe in as I remember breathing it in. I feel better. A hasn't told me anything about Dylan, the boy whose body I'm about to meet. But when I step into the bookstore's cafe, there's no question who I'm looking for, because it's so clear he's looking for me. Our eyes meet, and our eyes have already met. I head over. "Hey," I say.
"Hey,"
he says back. He's chosen the same table as last time, and this, of all things, overwhelms me. Everything that's happened since last time, it's like I'm feeling it all at once. "I need coffee," I say to him. I need to gather my thoughts, and I really do need coffee. He doesn't seem to mind.
"Yeah, of course," he says.
He's really geeky today, with a geeky voice, like something from Big Bang Theory. His t-shirt doesn't have anything on it. It's just a blue t-shirt. I wonder how hard A had to look to find one without a joke on it. Then I yell at myself for jumping to so many conclusions just because the guy looks like a geek. "Do you want anything?" I offer.
"Sure."
He doesn't try to come with me, and I'm glad to have the 2 minutes of waiting and ordering and waiting. I stare at my hands and think of him staring at my hands yesterday. Did they look like the same hands? Or does familiarity somehow alter them? The girl behind the counter calls out my order and hands it over. I carry our drinks to the table, and for a few seconds, a few too many seconds, we sit there awkwardly. He's waiting for me to say something. I'm waiting for him to say something. We're not saying anything. I break the silence and tell him, "It feels like the morning after." He looks at me kindly, nervously.
"I know."
the morning after. I can't believe I said that. Because what does he know about a morning after? Isn't he always somewhere else? He's looking at me. At all of me. My hands, my face, my eyes. Even though I do it every day, I wonder what it was like to be inside me, to see the world like this when you're not already used to it. Calm. What I feel right now is a strange calm. A and I have just done something it's possible that nobody else has ever done. I am sitting across from someone who has seen through my eyes, and A is sitting across from someone who can tell him what it was like to have vanished for a day. I woke up, and I knew something was different, I tell him, even before I saw your letter. It wasn't the usual disorientation, but I didn't feel like I'd missed a day. It was like I woke up and something had been added. Then I saw your letter and started reading, and immediately I knew it was true. It had actually happened. I stopped when you told me to stop and tried to remember everything about yesterday. It was all there, not the things I'd usually forget, like waking up or brushing my teeth, but climbing that mountain, having lunch with Justin, dinner with my parents, even writing the letter itself. I had a memory of that. It shouldn't make sense. Why would I write a letter to myself for the next morning? But in my mind, it makes sense. Gently, he asks, "Do you feel me there, in your memories?" I shake my head. Not in the way you'd think. I don't feel you in control of things, or in my body or anything. I feel like you were with me, like I can feel your presence there, but it's outside of me. Listen to me. If I turned the TV on at 1 in the morning and heard a girl saying the things I'm saying, I would think she was a total nut job. It's insane that we're having this conversation, I point out. But of course, that's not how A is going to see it or feel it. This is normal to him, I remind myself.
I wanted you to remember everything, he says. And it sounds like your mind went along with that, or maybe it wanted you to remember everything, too.
I don't know. I'm just glad I do.
And do you remember feelings, or is it just the scene you see?
What do you mean?
Like, if I asked what was going through your mind when you had lunch with Justin, could you?
I close my eyes and try to go back there. I see him eating pizza. I don't really remember what he said, only that he's talking a lot. But I can't remember being happy or annoyed or angry or anything. I just remember that I was there. Nothing, I say, my eyes still closed. You know when you're really pissed at someone and then a few days later you remember that you were pissed but can't remember what it was about? Well, this is the opposite of that. I open my eyes and see him taking in what I'm saying. I think I'm confirming something he's always suspected. You really don't know what it's like for us, do you? I say.
No, he answers quietly. I don't.
He asks me about a few of the other things that happened yesterday, talking to Rebecca, the climbing, the dinner conversation with my parents. I tell him the only one that's vivid to me is the climbing. I do feel something when I think of that sense of breathing in, of freedom. Is this emotion, or is this actual physical sensation that I'm remembering? We can't decide. It's interesting, I admit. Really twisted and weird and crazy, but also interesting.
You are extraordinary for understanding and for being willing to be with me even after I was where I was.
It's not your fault, I know.
Thank you.
It's hard to believe that I thought I could stay away from him. It's hard to believe I thought I could run away from this because it feels so comfortable right now. Thank you for not messing up my life, I say, and for keeping my clothes on. Unless, of course, you don't want me to remember that you sneaked a peek.
No peeks were sneaked.
I believe you. Amazingly, I believe you about everything. And because I believe him, I also want him to tell me more about what it was like for him, what he saw when he was me. But it also feels like a raging ego thing to ask. What kind of girl asks for a second opinion about her own life? A senses me holding back. Of course.
What?
He asks. I decide to go for it. It's just, do you feel you know me more now? Because the weird thing is, I feel I know you more. Because of what you did and what you didn't do. Isn't that strange? I would have thought that you would have found out more about me, but I'm not sure that's true.
I got to meet your parents,
he says. Oh, boy. And what was your impression?
I think they both care about you in their own way.
I laugh. Well said.
Well, it was nice to meet them.
I'll be sure to remember that when you really meet them. Mom and Dad, this is A. You think you're meeting him for the first time, but actually you've met him before, when he was in my body.
I'm sure that'll go over well.
And the stupid thing is, I'm sure they would love him. If only I could freeze him as he is and take him home to Mom and Dad, they'd be thrilled. But I can't tell him that. It would be unfair of me to tell him that. So I ask him something else, just to be sure. It can never happen again, right? I say. You're never the same person twice. He nods.
Correct. It will never happen again.
No offense, but I'm relieved I don't have to go to sleep wondering if I'm going to wake up with you in control. Once, I guess I can deal with, but don't make a habit of it.
I promise. I want to make a habit of being with you, but not that way.
He says it so casually, like it's no big deal, like I might not even hear it. But I hear it. You've seen my life, I say. Tell me a way you think this can work.
We'll find a way.
That's not an answer, I point out. It's a hope.
Hope's gotten us this far, not answers.
Good point. I sip my coffee. I know this is weird, but I keep wondering, are you really not a boy or a girl? I mean, when you were in my body, did you feel more at home than you would in the body of a boy?
I'm just me,
she says.
I always feel at home, and I never feel at home. That's just the way it is.
I don't know why this isn't enough for me, but it's not. And when you're kissing someone, I press.
Same thing.
And during sex?
Is Dylan blushing? Right now, is he blushing?
Bright red. Yeah.
Good, because I know I am.
I don't know why the word sex would make him blush so much, but then I realize why. And I blurt out, you've never had... He sputters.
It wouldn't be fair of me to...
Never! He's as red as a strawberry now.
I am so glad you find this funny,
he says. Sorry.
There was this one girl.
Aha! Really?
Yeah, yesterday, when I was in your body. Don't you remember? I think you might have gotten her pregnant.
That's not funny.
I only have eyes for you,
he says. And the way he says it isn't funny at all. Or teasing. Or careless. Sincerity. I think that's the word for this. For meaning something so much that it can't be anything other than what it is. I'm not used to it. I start. I have to tell him. I have to keep us in the world of reality, and in the world of reality, we cannot be together.
Not now, he interrupts. Let's stay on the nice note.
The nice note? That rings its own note within me. And that note is, momentarily, louder than reality. Okay, I say. I can do that. So instead of talking about tomorrow, we talk more about yesterday. I ask him what else he noticed, and he brings up all of these things that I would never, ever notice. Physical details, like a small red birthmark at the base of my left thumb, and memories like this time Rebecca got gum caught in her hair. He's also pretty committed to convincing me that my parents care about me. I tell him he must have gotten them on a good day. He doesn't argue. But I can also see he doesn't completely know what I mean, because he's never with someone through bad days and good days. He doesn't know life like that, which again reminds me how he'd never be equipped to deal with someone as bad-good as me. A glances at the time on his phone, and I realize I should be keeping track of time as well. Home for dinner, home for homework, home for bed, home for my life. It's getting late, I say.
I know.
So we should probably...
But only if you promise we'll see each other again, soon. Like, tomorrow, if we can. And if not tomorrow, then the day after tomorrow. To-morrow. Let's call that to-morrow.
It's starting again, and there's nothing I can do to stop it. Because I don't want to stop it. Because as long as it stays like this, two people talking over coffee, there aren't any decisions that have to be made. How can I say no? I say. I'm dying to see who you'll be next. The sincerity returns as he tells me,
I'll always be A.
I stand up and kiss him on the forehead. I know, I say. That's why I want to see you. I imagine people looking at us as we stand up from the table, as we throw out our coffee cups and say goodbye. That went well, they'd think. Just two teenagers on a date. Not a first date, no, too familiar for that. And not nearly a last date. Because it went well. Because this geeky boy and this quiet girl clearly like each other. You don't have to be inside our bodies to realize that. Chapter 20. The next day, A is 4 hours away from me, in the body of some girl. It might as well be 40 hours or 40 days. I tell A there's always tomorrow, and as I type it, I want to believe it, but I don't really believe it. With a whole day ahead of me, I decide to do an experiment. I am going to pretend I am a stranger in my own body. I stare in the mirror right after my shower. How many times have I done this before? Stared at myself as the steam cleared. Tried and failed to make it seem better. Countless. But how many of these times have I actually seen myself? I will look at what's wrong. I will fixate on the blemishes, the bad hair, the fuzz. How uneven I am. How tired I look. How fat I'm getting. How loose. But I don't take an overall picture. I don't step back and look at the whole thing and think, this is me. And I certainly don't step back and look at the whole thing and ask, is this really me? I'm doing that now. How much of my body is really me? My face is me, for sure. Anyone who looked at my face would know it was me. Even with my hair wet and drawn back, it's me. But after that? If I showed myself a picture of myself from the shoulders down, would I be sure it was me? Could I identify myself that way? I close my eyes and ask myself what my feet look like. I only kind of know. Same with my hands. I have no idea what my back looks like. I let it define me, but I can't even define it. If I were a stranger in my body, what would I think of it? I open my eyes, and I'm not sure. A stranger wouldn't know any of the stories behind any of the small scars, the tricycle fall, the light bulb smash. A stranger might not care if my boobs aren't identical, or if the mole on my arm has more hair than the rest of my arm. Why bother judging if you're a stranger in a body? It's almost like driving a car. Yes, you don't want the car to be a shit heap, but pretty much a car is a car. It doesn't matter what it looks like, as long as it gets you where you need to go. I know I am not a car, but as I walk through school, I imagine this smaller Rhiannon driving my body. She is my real self. The body is just a car. And I wonder, when Preston talks to me, it feels like he's talking to the driver. But when a guy I don't know looks at me in the hall, he's staring at the car. When my teacher looks out at the class as he's droning on about history, he's not seeing the drivers, he's seeing the parked cars. And when Justin kisses me, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like he's trying to kiss the driver. Other times, he's just kissing the car. I try to imagine myself in other bodies, steering them around, experiencing how they're seen. The conclusion I reach, I don't like my body very much, but I'm not sure I'd like anyone else's body any better. They're all strange when you look at them for too long. I know A is not here, but I want A to be inside one of the bodies I'm staring at. I want a head to turn and for me to see A inside, because only A could understand all of the crazy places my mind is going, because A has taken my mind there. A has made me want to reach past all the cars, to get to all the drivers.
"Are you okay?" Preston asks at lunch. "You're really out of it today."
"No," I tell him. "I'm really, really inside of it." He laughs. I think a laugh is like the driver honking the horn, advertising pleasure. I think that if A were in Preston's body, I'd kiss him hard. I know this is a ridiculous thought. I have it anyway. Preston, of course, has no idea what I'm thinking. He sees me, yes, but not in a way that would give away my thoughts. The car can smile all at once, but that doesn't mean you can see the driver's expression. I receive emails from A. He tells me, "The girl I am today is not nice. I can make her nice for a day, but what does that do?" He says, "I want us to be walking in the woods again." He asks,